Mad Sessmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sessmat. It's been a whirlwind, not just yesterday with Letter of Intent Day, but you figure with the Waste Management Open and the Super Bowl and then Letter of Intent Day, wow, the week has just flown the last 10 days. But we had a terrific Letter of Intent Day. Ton of people coming into the site, checking out our content, which is fine. It's great. More importantly to me, our content was really good. Really, really, really good. And we're not just putting up stuff to chase a bunch of clicks and all that nonsense. It was really good content and things that we're very proud of. Yesterday, we streamed live from Arizona Christian, and then we streamed live from U of A, and then we streamed live from Todd Graham, and then we streamed live last night. Eric was in Flagstaff with Jerome Sauer, so it was terrific. Doug Haller is going to be with us here in about 15 minutes, AZ Central ASU Insider. I saw Doug yesterday at Todd Graham's press conference. We'll rehash a little bit on their recruiting class and look ahead to ASU U of A Saturday afternoon on the basketball court at 2:30. So Doug Haller will join us this morning. In studio today, to put a bow on Letter of Intent Day, Brian Lewerke is a quarterback at Pinnacle High School, and whenever I watched him play or I heard people talk about him, they were completely, totally impressed with his toughness and how well that he played and performed. I'm going to turn the interview around, though, not do the typical, hey, how's it going at Michigan State? It must be exciting for you, and I want to talk to him about how the recruitment went and turn this into something for you guys out there that think my son's going to be the next, or you may be that player, or you may just not have any idea on recruitment. And what a quarterback who decides to go to a Big Ten school. What did he go through? Who made some promises to him? What type of promises? Eric has a terrific read up on the site right now from Christian Kirk, who's already down at Texas A&M. It was six questions with Christian. One of them was along the lines of, what did some schools promise you would happen? What would be like something cool? Right, Eric? I'm not misstating it.
Yeah, and his answer was, they promised that I would get to hang out with celebrities.
Yeah, that's a real enticement. Whatever. So Brian Lewerke is going to be in studio. I'm looking forward to that interview.
And he's much like Christian Kirk. He could care less about the celebrities. He's a football player first and a... And chasing all that other stuff is not even close to a priority.
We'll throw some video over the top of him playing so you can see him in action, too. It's not just going to be, you know, typical interview. So Brian Lewerke in studio, Pinnacle star quarterback. And we'll talk to him about being a Michigan State Spartan, but more importantly, about the recruitment process. Brock Huard's going to join us in hour number two. So since the Super Bowl finished, Brock has been like the most popular guest on talk show circuit, and he's been a regular with us for the last 3 years. This isn't just coming along, saddling up beside him and saying, hey, can you join us on the show? And I'm not one of these guys. I don't have to have the guy right then, because what I'll do is different than what everybody else is doing. To me, it's Matt Lauer had to fly across country. Eric told me about this morning, that the Today Show's main face had to fly over to Seattle to get a answer from Pete Carroll about what happened at the end of the Super Bowl. I don't know. Are there bigger things going on in our country on a Thursday than sending over the main face of the Today Show? Evidently not.
It didn't play until the second part of the first hour, but it was the first or second thing they promoted when they came on the air this morning at 7.
Yeah.
Because you know how it is, Brad. The Today Show is our finger on the pulse when it comes to the overlapping sports and news stories.
It's not the only show, though. I mean, Good Morning America is very good. You know, the CBS morning show it's okay. And then the local shows aren't going to do anything here. But I always look at the national morning shows because they're shown out here on a tape delay basis. You know, they don't care about the West Coast. This is stuff that was happened 3 hours ago. So things change in our world. I can't believe we're still showing a three-hour-old show. But, you know, people sit around and they get used to their ways and their habits. And the Today Show is really good. And Good Morning America is really good for like the first 12 to 15 minutes. And then it just slowly turns into this train wreck. It slowly evolves into this, we are chasing the woman who's home at the house because the man is gone. And we don't want to get too newsy or too sportsy. or to this or to that. We want to make sure that the mom who's like, I don't know, 31 that has her first baby and is staying at home, or the grandma are going to sit here and watch Al Roker just muddle his way through a show. It's fine. It's part of what, part of the fabric of our society. These morning shows are still relevant in a day and age where most TV news is not. It's just not. It's filling time. So I think that's really interesting that that the Today Show felt like they needed to fly all the way out to Seattle today, 4 days after the Super Bowl, to get an answer. Of course, my conspiracy theorist is Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels just buried Pete Carroll on the air, and the NFL is a partner with NBC, and the NFL brought their hammer down and said, you know, you better make our guy look good. That's how this works. And they caved. So we'll talk to Brock about all those things. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino is just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains, if you've never been. And it's the perfect time because Valentine's Day is right around the corner. Guys, you keep putting it off, and you're going to end up pulling over to the roadside and getting some wilted flowers that will be dead in a few days and say, why didn't I listen to Sesmat and go to the Honda Resort and Casino and then go to Sunrise and do some skiing? It's real simple. You head up to the Honda Resort and Casino, go to the Honda Resort and Casino, stay there, eat some great food, have some fun, pull down on the slots, head up to the Sunrise Ski Resort, and get all your ski stuff there at the ski shop. Do your day of skiing. If you're not a skier, you can do your sledding, your snowboarding, then head back to the Honda Resort and Casino for dinner and pull down to the slot some more and some entertainment. It's all there for you. And Valentine's Day right around the corner. You don't want to screw this up, so head to the Honda Resort and Casino. It is just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains, Honda Resort and Casino. There's some things today that I'm going to get over to, but I do want to put a bow on Letter of Intent Day. There's a couple cheating in the NFL stories that have gotten lost in the wash here the last few days. Atlanta pumping in some crowd noise, and the GM of the Cleveland Browns sending text messages down that I think are interesting. Last night, Steph Curry pumped through 51. Golden State is terrific. The Suns play tonight at Portland. All that stuff's fine, but I do want to go back to Letter of Intent Day because there's still a lot of interest in that, and this is part of what we do and do well. So, Eric, you were at NAU last night. I was over with Todd Graham at 3:30 yesterday afternoon. And then last night, I hosted a table at the Sheraton downtown. I had 10 friends, partners of Sports 360, and they were all having a great time watching Todd Graham go thank the fans. And then the position coaches were up on stage, and coordinators Patterson and Norvell were up there showing huddle tape. Thought it was going to be game tape, but it was huddle tape. And Tim Healy and Jeff Van Raphorst emceed. It was over 500 people, and it was a who's who. There were a lot of business leaders that were there last night. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. If you're one of those that doesn't think that this is a big deal in the sporting community, you are out of touch, plain and simple. So I was enamored with the event, and of course, every player that they showed, it ended up being, he's the greatest thing, he can do this, he can do that. There was never a mention of he's a stiff, he can't play dead, and he has no grades. There was none of that that happened last night, which would be very entertaining if they ever decided to do that. You were in Flagstaff.
Yeah, and my experience was similar to yours, just on a smaller scale. They had it at Little America Hotel, which is just about a five-minute drive from campus. And yeah. Coach Jerome Sowers, who does a nice job up there, he's got 100 wins, believe it or not, 100 wins at NAU. He is pretty excited about their class. It includes 11 in-state guys of the 21 that they signed.
Okay, Todd Graham's class has three in-state kids. Jared Cohen was at U of A yesterday in Tucson with Rich Rodriguez, and they went through their class. I started the after the show yesterday over at Arizona Christian. Jordan Hamm and I were over there, and they introduced their class that had, I think it's upwards of, was it 37 Arizona high school kids? And then when you throw the JUCOs in there, it was 43 kids that had Arizona connections. And I'm all about the kids on this deal. This is, for that many kids to have an opportunity to keep playing football in state. Okay, we're not talking about the out-of-state kids. If you throw in what NAU, ACU, U of A, and ASU did all together, it's great for us here in our state. We are a football state. We're not just a pro football state. We're a college football state. We have a major bowl here that's going to have a national title game in less than a year. And on the high school level, we're getting better and better. I thought it was interesting. Les Miles at LSU. I think Les Miles is going to get, I'll make a prediction right now, Eric. Les Miles is going to be a dead man walking this season, and Rich Rod's name will be front and center for LSU. That's my, I'm calling it here on February 5th. That's what I'm saying.
And that's a job if it is open and Rich Rod's name is floated out there. If I'm a Tucson resident and a U of A fan, I'd be pretty worried that he's going to jump
ship. I'm floating it out there. So Les Miles was asked about players leaving the state. Quote, to hell with any player that doesn't pick LSU, end quote. That's pretty endearing there, Les. Tell me you're not feeling the pressure just a little bit. I can't imagine Rich Rod or Todd saying that on the Division I level. And then there's Bobby Petrino.
They may say that, but they'll never say it in a public forum.
No. And Todd actually talked about how he's disappointed and frustrated that they can't close the borders here in Arizona, that too many kids are leaving. And Brian Lewerke is going to Michigan State, quarterback at Pinnacle. He'll be here in studio in about a half hour. But Bobby Petrino is in the middle of the news again, and Bobby Petrino's at Louisville. Bobby Petrino actually has an Arizona kid, Tyler Brugman, who's a quarterback up at from Brophy to Washington State, transferred to Louisville. So there's an Arizona connection there. Bobby Petrino is in the news today in a big way, and it's not for racing a motorcycle and running around with a secretary and all the things that he did previous and got fired. Here is the recruitment of a kid named Matt Colburn. Listen to this story. 8 months ago, Colburn committed to play for Petrino at Louisville. Louisville in a second stint with Petrino. Colburn is considered a three-star prospect, very good football player, not the kind of elite talent who has scholarship offers, though, from top schools. At the time that the kid committed, Louisville seemed like a good fit, but it turned out that Louisville had many good players commit to this year's class, and they were expecting so many good players, they couldn't fit them all under the scholarship limit. So instead of telling some of the new kids who have come along, sorry, we don't have any scholarships to give you, Petrino decided this week that Colburn, who shut down his own recruiting 8 months ago when he committed to Louisville, would not have a scholarship to enroll at Louisville in the fall after all. So basically, it's I've got too many guys, and we're just going to pull yours. The kid was left in limbo. The other schools that had recruited him moved on because 8 months ago he said, no, I'm going to be a Louisville Cardinal. And they've reached their scholarship limits. They don't have any scholarships to offer him at other schools. Unlike Petrino, those other coaches won't kick another kid to the curb to make room. So Colburn is now scrambling to find another college to attend. Here's the better part of this story in recruiting. Bobby Petrino didn't have the guts to call the kid himself. Instead, he had an assistant coach make the call, and he won't be getting a scholarship to Louisville this year. So now the high school coach, Colburn's high school coach, said that Bobby Petrino is never allowed on campus again. I tell my players, when you commit, you commit. That's what a commitment is. This kid's committed for 8 months. It's irritating that men can do this. I don't know. If you look at Bobby Petrino's track record, Todd Graham yesterday had a key part of his class decommit, Paul Lucas. As it sat last night, they did not have a wide receiver in their class this year. Todd Graham kept going on and on and on about DJ Foster moving to wide receiver. So we're going to talk about that on the other side, ASU's class with Doug Haller, AZ Central Sports, Arizona State insider. We'll also talk with him about the U of A-ASU basketball game this Saturday afternoon and how Doug think that they fared yesterday. About a half hour, Brian Lewerke, Pinnacle star quarterback, Michigan State commit in studio. I'm going to talk to him about the recruiting process. Very basic for some of you. Others, I think it'll be eye-opening. And then Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst, morning show host in Seattle. The Seahawks, the world is collapsing in Seattle. The Today Show had to show up there today. That's all straight ahead. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmann.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Last night, I went down to the Sheraton and we hosted a table. Sports360AZ.com had a table of 10 for the Todd Graham recruiting dinner wrap-up. And it was pretty cool. Todd spoke on stage with Jeff Van Rapphorst and Tim Healy, and then he turned it over to his assistant coaches, his coordinators actually, Mike Norvell and Keith Patterson. And they showed all the tape of each kid. It was the huddle tape. It wasn't actually the game tape. I've been to this event before. We bought tables in the past. And they usually show the game tape. It was the huddle tape. And, of course, every player was just graded out as terrific, awesome, amazing. None of them had two left feet. None of them had a 1.3 GPA. None of them were going to fail out of classes. I'm not saying that's going to happen with any of these kids, but we all know enough about the recruiting process that every class, if you're able to hit on, I don't know, let me ask Doug Haller this, AZ Central ASU Insider. Doug, would you say if you hit on 70% of your recruiting class every year, you're in good shape, or do you think it should be more than that? What's your view?
Well, I mean, it should be more than that, but I would say that's a good place to start. It's funny because you always have some four-star guys that don't pan out, and you have some two-star or lower three-star guys who end up, you know, starting for 3 years. I have a lot of respect for the recruiting services and their talent evaluators because they do a really good job, but this is a really difficult thing to predict.
Okay, so as we sit here this morning, are you surprised that they don't have a wide receiver in this class? Now, that may change, but as we sit here today, are you surprised they don't have one?
That, to me, is the biggest surprise of this class because, Brad, you would think, given what Jalen Strong has done the last 2 years, particularly last year when he was one of the top five receivers in the country, you would think that you could build off that. And, you know, I'm not saying that Arizona State didn't try or struck out. It just didn't work out for them. But you would think, you know, when you could point to number 21,
right,
go in the highlight reels, how the highlight catches, how they used him, and the fact that he is projected to go possibly as a first-round draft pick. I mean, it should not have been any easier to bring in a high quality, a high talent, a very talented receiver. Now, there's still and I asked Mike Norvell about this yesterday, and he said, well, you know, he said we're in on some people, Calvin Broaddus from Las Vegas, Bishop Gordon among them, and it didn't work out. And when it doesn't work out with some of the guys that you're after, you're not just going to take a receiver just to take a receiver. They're still involved with at least one guy, and, you know, that's Terrell Chapman, the guy who's committed to Miami, and, you know, maybe that works out. But if not, you know, possibly this leaves them some wiggle room for some possible transfers down the road.
Yeah, and my understanding last night on Chapman was it was TCU and ASU, that it's between those two that he was a Miami guy. But I get the feeling they feel like that they flipped him away from Miami, but the TCU is there too. But we'll see
correct,
on that
correct.
Front.
Yeah, I don't know if he's officially decommitted from Miami. I don't know if he actually you have to go through, you know, that actual process. But right. Yeah, I that is the same thing I heard, that TCU is just as involved.
The so I felt like yesterday, and you were there as well, that Todd Graham softened that blow by reiterating more than once about DJ Foster being moved to wide receiver. There are a lot of fans that were surprised by that bit of news. Were you?
No. When TJ decided to come back, you know, I think that was one of the things that, you know, the transition, that next year he wasn't going to run the ball much with DeMario Richard and Kalen Ballage back there. DJ explained it to me that instead of being a running back slash receiver, next year he'll be a wide receiver slash running back. Mm-hmm. I still think Mike Norvell is very creative with how he gets at the ball in guys' hands. I still think DJ will get carried, but I don't think it's going to be much. I think he's going to be the number one target, probably in the slot, but they may move him around to different places. That should be really interesting because going into last year, I asked DJ about, you know, being a running back, being a receiver, and he said that, you know, he, in his heart, in his mind, he's a running back. And, you know, that's how he kind of gets things going, and, you know, to start games, his mental approach, he starts as a running back. Now he'll have to take a different approach next year.
Doug Haller with Brad Susmat, AZ Central ASU Insider, Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. If you were to sort out the quarterbacks from your view as it stands right now, and I'll just throw my two cents at you first and blow me out of the water. Gerhardt gets moved to safety. Wilkins potentially transfers. White is the guy a year from now. And Perkins moves in position after Berkovici. What say you on that?
Well, I know that's a popular discussion point, and it's funny because this team went from having, you know, quarterback. Did they go two classes without a quarterback?
Yeah.
I know they had. Yeah.
And, Dobbs didn't show up.
Right. Yeah. And all of a sudden, now they're really stocked at that position. I agree with you on Gerhardt. I just don't see where he fits in at this point. Now, and keep in mind, he did initially commit to ASU as a defensive back. So,
or baseball with him too, Doug. Right? I mean, he could go that way.
Yeah, he's very much he's very talented on the ball field as well. The only thing when people bring up Colton Gerhardt, it just kind of reminds me of Taylor Kelly when he got started. kind of a dual threat quarterback. He came in, made some plays in practice every now and then, but no one could see where Taylor Kelly was going to fit in when it was Mike Bercovici and Michael Eubank. And then when it all settled, he was the guy for 3 years. So I hesitate to kind of write off Colton Gerhardt, but I agree with you. That kind of seems to be where, that's where I would guess at this point as well, Brad. And, you know, Manny Wilkins, from what, you know, we get to watch all of practice, but I thought he made really good progress from the time we saw him at Tonizona to the time we saw him in the bowl practices. So he has a chance. But, you know, everything I've talked to a lot of national talent evaluators about Brady White, and I've gone from everybody saying he'll be a solid 3-year starting quarterback for ASU, and I've talked to some who think he'll come in and battle Bercovici before it's over for the starting job. Very polished kid. And then Bryce Perkins, you know, I don't know how that's going to work out, just because, you know, he's a different type of quarterback. You know, you could also see him playing a different position down the road too, if it doesn't work out. So I think they have a lot of different options there, and it's going to be intriguing to watch.
I think Perkins could be when DJ Foster is gone, they use that Percy Harvin analogy, that they could go that direction. I think there's some political side on White, and that is the quarterback guru who delivers him, right? You don't play his kid, you're not going to get the next one and the next one and the next one. I could be overthinking this, but I do believe that there is something to that if you look at who developed Brady White and where that all started at.
With Brady White?
Yeah.
Yeah, without question, I think that factors into it as well. He's just extremely polished, and he has a lot of people in his corner. I've only seen him on his highlight films, and I've seen his workouts on TV. So I'm really excited to see once he gets out there in the spring. And that's another thing. I mean, that's an advantage, being out there for the spring. You know, going through it gives you a head start. And ASU is lucky in that regard. They have 6 guys, which is about normal for a lot of schools, but for ASU, it's a lot, and that's going to pay off for them down the road.
A couple other questions, or one other question in football, and I'll briefly get over to the basketball game on Saturday. But I asked Todd yesterday about going big game hunting. From my point of view, it seemed like he bristled a little bit about the in-state side, that he hasn't figured out how to kick that door in, and it really wasn't a big deal for them to go to Virginia or to go to Tennessee to bring in some guys. I just haven't seen that approach by him yet. What were your thoughts?
No, I mean, that's the one thing. I think they have made progress in-state. They're definitely involved with the right kids. And some of those battles I just don't think they're going to win, just because it's always appealing for college kids, it seems, to get away from home. Even though they have made progress, you know, when you see Christian Kirk leaving, you know, that sticks out. I mean, that they should, those kids in the SEC or those kids in other areas, they stay at the in-state school. So that'll always be a sticking point. The one issue I have with going to Louisiana, going to Virginia, going to Tennessee, you know, it works out well. I'm not ready to think ASU is at that level to be a national recruiting program, because I just think it's going to be so hard for them to compete with the high-ranking kids in the SEC when, you know, the SEC has such a following and there's such a strong pull to keep those guys from home or keep those guys home. I see, you know, some guys may commit, but in the end, I think the SEC is just such a powerful force. I don't think ASU is on that level yet. Now, they're making strides. They're making strides, but, I mean, obviously, the closer you can the stronger the ties you have to in your own backyard, and give Todd and his staff credit. They did
incredibly well in California this year. They really did.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's going to be, that will always be their lifeblood, I think, in recruiting. And I always think going out, the closer you get to SEC country and the closer you get to across the country is going to be a little riskier.
Okay, about a minute and a half here. So ASU basketball on the floor against U of A. We know what happened last year. Is this a big game for Herb at home with Ray against the rival, or is this just middle of the season? Let's see what happens. Are they more competitive than they were in Tucson a month ago?
I'd say the latter. You know, going into Tucson, at that point in the season, ASU was still going through some growing pains. Their rotation really wasn't set. I don't think anybody really expected more than what happened.
They were awful that night. I mean,
yeah,
they were just awful.
And you could see it coming. They weren't ready to play that caliber game at that time. I would think there's no reason not to expect them to be more competitive this time. You know, they've had stretches where, you know, they've been competitive a lot, Brad, but, you know, they just put themselves in position to win. And, you know, they just don't have, you know, they can't hit their free throws, which is a problem. When you're 0-6 in games decided by 5 points, that's not good.
Yeah.
They can't get a defensive stop. You know, Joseph Young gets Oregon, hit a shot. You know, whenever they need a stop, and last year, Herb brought this up the other day, last year when they needed a stop, you know, Jordan blocked a shot to win. They don't have anybody to block the shot, and they're not good enough defensively to force it in other ways. But, you know, I don't think you can think they're going to win on Saturday, but I do think the fans should expect them to be more competitive.
Yeah, I would hope so. I appreciate your time and your insight as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
It's Doug Haller with us, AZ Central, Arizona State. And a college, he's a great writer. I love reading his stuff. I would tell him this to his face. I think college basketball is his passion, and he's really good at writing about college football. It's not a swipe. It's just he's got some Indiana blood in him. How can you not have some passion on the basketball front? It's always good to talk with Doug. Great insight there. Brian Lewerke is going to join us in studio in about 10 minutes. On the other side, some things other than the recruiting front, the cheating in the NFL. So why is it these two stories come up and basically are just ignored? Or is it just we're trying to figure out Marshawn Lynch and Doug Baldwin grabbing themselves and dropping a deuce in the end zone, and it just got lost in the wash? There's two stories of cheating by the Atlanta Falcons and Cleveland Browns. I'll get to that on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Last night at the ASU football recruiting dinner, I had Big Bad Lloyd Kovalt, one of Tim Hovick's chief lieutenants, sit at our table last night. Tim had some meetings that came up. And I was asking Lloyd, how are things going? How's business? Very upbeat, very positive. It's always good to be around upbeat, positive people. There's enough negative in this industry that we're in, and in a lot of industries. I'm just want to be around positive, good, solid people. And that's what they have at Santan Ford. You know, yesterday for me, after the show was done, it was get in the Fusion, head over to Arizona Christian for their press conference, sit with their coach, Donnie Annis and company, and then head over to ASU, sit with Todd Graham and his coaching staff and hear all about the letter of intent there. And then head down to the Sheraton last night for the big dinner and about 500 people. And I pull up in the valet. You guys ever pulled up in valet and you're in a vehicle, you're like, I'm in the wrong vehicle for valet. This is not good. This is embarrassing. That's not me. That's not in the Fusion. In fact, the guy that came over, he's like, that's a cool looking car, right? And when they pull it up after I'm done with the event last night, I feel comfortable getting into it. Yeah, I got to fold up at 6'8". Who doesn't, this height? But I finished it. Nice drive home. Made a few phone calls. Talked to Eric. He was coming back from Flagstaff. And talked to Jared about how it was down in Tucson and just, you know, get in touch with the staff. Comfortable, very hectic day on some levels, great day on others, and it's all in the vehicle that I drive, the Ford Fusion from Santan Ford. Just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista, stop into Santan Ford, where it is all about you. So there's a couple stories in the NFL that I think got lost in the shuffle here last few days, and that's cheating. One is in Atlanta, where pumping in crowd noise is something that has gone on for years and years in professional sports, not just in football. It happens in NBA arenas. I've heard about pumping in crowd noise through the years, but Falcons owner Arthur Blank admitted to his organization's wrongdoing. The owner said, "I think what we've done in 2013, 2014 was wrong." So for 2 years, they're pumping in crowd noise in Atlanta. Atlanta is a pretty soft sports market. People make fun of us out here in Arizona. I think we're more passionate than they are in Atlanta. The owner said anything that affects the competitive balance and fairness on the field, we're opposed to as a league, as a club, and as an owner. It's obviously embarrassing, but beyond embarrassing, it doesn't represent our culture and what we're all about. So you have Deflategate, which receives a ton of attention because it's postseason. You have the Atlanta Falcons, who had a disappointing season. They blew out their coach. They didn't do a whole lot this year. And so now the Falcons, who went 4-12, should noise manipulation. Of those four wins, three of them were at home. So three of their eight home games. So was it really that big of a factor that they had noise on their side, or as a added bonus to the fans that bothered to show up? Then you have this story in Cleveland. A suspension for general manager Ray Farmer, a loss of a draft pick, and a fine for the teams are among the possible sanctions the Browns are facing in the NFL's investigation into allegations that texts were being sent to the sidelines during games. So the deal on that is the general manager is up in a box. The general manager can send down text messages, or the general manager could be in a place where he could have technology that could be working for him. So texting is a violation of the NFL rules prohibiting electronic communication during games. You may not think that it's that big of a deal. Cleveland.com originally reported last month that the text messages from a high-level front office member were sent and said it was one issue in former offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan leaving the team. He perceived it as interference from the front office regarding coaching decisions. I've told you before that most sports owners are nuts. Most sports owners, really, if you take a step back, they've got gobs of money, but they're nuts. So you have a GM who knows that this is against the rules, who decides, I'm going to send text messages down to tell my staff what to do, or to send messages over to my offensive coordinator. A leaked source confirmed that the general manager Farmer was doing the texting, most going to the quarterback's coach. You know, I've got Brian Lewerke here in about 5 minutes. So Brian's out there, he's playing, and the quarterback coach is getting texts from the general manager saying, hey, have Brian do this and have Brian do that. That's high school to college. This is in the pro style. Hey, so when we're looking at our quarterback down on the field, I want to make sure that Johnny is running the plays that I want, so I'm going to text down. The text did not necessarily deal with strategy, but with issues related to quarterback play, use of personnel, and second-guessing of play calls. What the bleep were you calling on that play? The source has not seen the exact text, but learned of it through the Browns. So the NFL is looking at both these stories. Crowd noise in Atlanta, which, again, has gone on forever. And can you really prevent texting by a general manager? On the other side, we're going to switch gears. So Letter of Intent Day is all done. And I want to sit with someone who is at the top of the recruiting class in terms of national perception here in Arizona. Brian Lewerke is a terrific quarterback over at Pinnacle High School. He's going to Michigan State. And it's much like when we had Christian Kirk in studio about 4 months ago. I want to talk to Brian about the process, but not the typical. So what was it like and how many letters and all that? What's some of the goofy things people promised them? You know, hey, if you come here, we're going to get this, you're going to get that. Did they stay true to their core beliefs? Todd Graham talked about that yesterday. And being an in-state kid and leaving the state. We'll talk to Brian about that. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmann.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
Sports360az.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. In studio, Brian Lewerke is with us for a couple of minutes. Quarterback at Pinnacle High School. He signed his letter of intent yesterday to Michigan State. More importantly, Eric, you didn't tell me this, Brian was a reporter for the Super Bowl with ESPNU, huh?
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
I was at the Super Bowl media day.
You were telling me about the Marshawn Lynch interview you had. It was great.
Yeah, he was at the podium for 5 minutes and then left, so we got a video of his empty podium, but that was about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what did you do on Super Bowl Sunday?
You know, I introduced myself, telling what I was from. Then I was able to interview Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola. Those are kind of the only two big name guys. There's a couple other other guys, but
this was after the game. You interviewed Edelman
before the game.
Before the game,
yeah. This was I think the Tuesday before the game.
Oh, okay. So you went out to the hotel and did one of the media things, or what?
Yeah,
at the practices?
The U.S. Airways Center.
Oh, you went to that? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. And yeah. Eric didn't put you on. Wow, crushing. Well, were you starstruck?
I was. I mean, it was a little nerve wracking trying to, because I'm 5-10 years younger than most of those guys, and trying to ask them questions about their life, it was a little weird, but it was fun to be able to see like Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, and all those big level guys in the Super Bowl.
Did you ask a question that you got in the vehicle and drove away and said, "I am such a dope. I can't believe I asked that"?
No, I mean, I asked some weird questions. I asked them what their favorite video game was, what their favorite food was.
Of course.
Yeah, but I mean, there wasn't anything that I kind of regretted at all.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But you had a realization afterwards, and that is, you don't want to do this.
Oh, yeah, no, no way.
Done!
I did not like it at all. I mean, it was fun seeing all those guys, but I definitely don't want to be a reporter when I go up.
You didn't have this inner pulling saying, I should ask him for an autograph.
No, yeah, I didn't want to do that.
I should take a selfie with him.
I could have done that.
Thought about it?
I didn't think about it. I should have thought about it. If I had thought about it, I probably would have.
Really?
But yeah, I mean,
hey, Julian, let me take a picture with you.
Yeah, I would have done it.
Gronk would have gone that direction.
He was crowded by too many people. I couldn't get to him. But,
but you're a big guy. You could fight through
that's
it.
That's true.
All right, so you sign with Michigan State. You get it out of the way. If you were to talk to a parent. Let's go parent first. Mm-hmm. Talk to a parent whose son is on the precipice of going down the path that you just finished, which is you're going to get recruited by a lot of schools. What advice would you give that parent?
I would say I took kind of some visits that I kind of didn't really want to, some schools I wasn't interested in, and I think it was just a little too early to make those visits. I would say make sure the coaching staff's is into you and you're into the school before you make a visit. Obviously, you can't be 100% to the school before you make a visit, because a visit could change something about how much you like the school. But I think visits are really big to schools. All the recruiting camps, they're not as important as people say. I was lucky enough to be a part of one of the bigger ones, but, I mean, they don't really mean much. College coaches don't care about them.
The Elite 11s,
yeah,
the quarterback
exactly.
This, the
all
quarterback
the rivals
that.
Camps and all that, yeah, I mean,
You would pass on all that looking back on it?
I mean, I would definitely want to do it again, but I don't want to put as much weight on it as I probably did when I was there.
Did they pressure you to go to those camps? Was there pressure?
Coaches
or rivals, these sites, did they say you better come to these camps?
They kind of made it feel like if you didn't come to those camps, you wouldn't be a big-time player and you wouldn't have stars and coaches wouldn't like you as much. But coaches don't care about your stars or camps you go to, really.
So your first advice then is understand you don't have to go on every visit. Mm-hmm. Where did you go that in hindsight it was like, why did I do this?
I mean, Duke, I went there. I really liked the school. I just realized it's kind of too far away from me. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a big thing. Washington, I visited there. I liked the school. I think I kind of went there just because I was born in Washington. That was kind of a school that I liked. I didn't really... I liked the visit, but I realized when I was there, I'm not really sure why I'm here. I'm not really too interested in the school right now, but those are a couple schools.
Did you take those visits in last spring, junior year, summer?
I think so, yeah. One was in the spring, one was in the, I think it was the winter. One was in December, Washington was in December, Duke was in the spring, I think. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So in hindsight, it's, did you take visits too early? Or do you pare your list back? Would you have a better strategy? Not to be critical. I mean, you've obviously handled it right. You went to Michigan State. But if you're advising somebody yourself on, hey, as a quarterback, you don't necessarily need to go to these camps.
Yeah, I mean.
Make sure you pay attention to the places you're going to visit. Mm-hmm. Those are the two big takeaways you had from it?
Yeah, I think when you're on a visit, really picture yourself there. How would you feel if you lived here for the next 4 years? How would you feel playing here, being around all the coaching staff and the atmosphere of the college? So you just kind of got to look at all the things around the school when you visit.
Brian Lewerke with us in studio. So when you visited Michigan State, did they answer every question? What are the questions that you want to get answered if you're going back on that?
I mean, yeah, they definitely answered almost every single question. I was the first visit I took, they answered so many questions. I was, by the end of the day, my mouth was hurting from talking, and I was tired, but I wasn't tired of the school. I was just, you know, mentally tired of all the stuff they were throwing at me. And but I mean, I loved it all. Obviously, I liked them enough to commit. So
sure,
it was
sure.
Good, you know.
But they gave you a campus visit. They put you in touch with academic side.
Mm-hmm. Was both, it? Yeah. There was a campus tour. I saw the stadium, all the stuff. I talked with their academic advisors. The second time I went up, I even went for one of their camps and did a little workout with all the guys there. So
I think, and that's smart. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to have an interest in a school, I've always told parents, if you really have an interest in a school, try to pare it down from 10 to 5 and then go to that camp.
Yeah.
If it's your junior year or sophomore year, show up at that camp.
Yeah, that's the best way to get noticed by a school you like, is to go to their personal camps, not other camps that other people put on.
Okay, how do you handle the pressure outside? Okay, it may be parental, it may be all the outside influences, recruiting sites. Looking back on that, talk about handling the pressure.
Yeah, I mean, all the recruiters and all the rivals guys and scout guys and all those, they'll try to throw stuff at you and try to get you to say some stuff that you don't really want to say about a school.
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of got to listen to your parents. They should be supporting you, whatever school you go to. So listen to them and just try to keep a level head through it all.
How did you get to the point with parents? Because parents sometimes, you'll see the kid on letter of intent day that's sweating bullets and dad looks miserable and mom's not happy and
yeah.
Mom won't sign. How do you manage the parental thing?
I mean, my parents were awesome. They told me straight up before all the recruiting stuff, we're not going to sway you to any school. I'll tell you what schools I like, but I'm not going to make you go to that school because I like it. I want you to go to the school that you like. So,
did schools say things to you that in the back of your mind it's like, that doesn't influence me at all?
Not really. They kind of, everything they said kind of made sense. There's just some stuff that I valued more than others in
sure.
schools, you know.
Like Christian Kirk did a thing with Eric on, if you come to our school, you'll meet celebrities, right? And that
yeah.
was the one thing to him that he was like, that didn't make any sense at
yeah.
all. Did you have any of that too? Or
I don't think any schools did that to me, but I mean, I can see what you're saying. That's not really important to football, really. I mean,
sure.
it's fun to be able to see celebrities in schools, but when you're looking to go for an education for your football career, you don't really care about celebrities throughout the school.
This is a question that isn't meant to put you on the spot in any negative sort of way. I'm just curious. Todd Graham brought it up yesterday that
mm-hmm.
they've got to do a better job of figuring out how to keep kids at home. I think there's always going to be kids that are going to want to get out of state regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that the local schools, not just ASU, maybe U of A, they need to do to keep kids from leaving the state? You're a high-profile kid who said, I need to just get out of here.
I think ASU is doing a good job, you know, getting playing with other teams that are from different conferences that are considered by media and all that to be bigger,
mm-hmm.
as in the SEC or Big Ten or Big 12.
They're going to play Michigan State.
Yep, they'll yeah. be playing us pretty soon. They play A&M next year, I'm pretty sure. So, I mean, that's one way to get them on the map and start playing those higher-level schools that are considered higher. I mean, it's all based on your judgment.
Schedule stronger.
Yeah, exactly. I think that kind of helps. And obviously winning those games is big for it, too.
Sure. The high school experience, when I watched you play and I saw you against Hamilton, mm-hmm. it was really impressive. You had a way about you that showed that you really loved the game at the high school level. I think what's happening now, Brian, and correct me on this, I think that there's some kids that they get their college commitment out of the way, and they don't enjoy the high school season as much because mm-hmm. they're already looking to the next step. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you could look on both sides. People that don't commit before their senior season, they're kind of focusing on college. They're trying to, it's kind of in the back of their mind. And even if they do commit before the season, they still you have to kind of enjoy your high school experience. Now look forward to college because, I mean, high school is one step just to get you higher, but it's still fun to be able to play with all the friends you grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you go to college, you'll be playing with people that you just met that year. So you're not going to be able to have a huge bond with those guys. I mean, you'll build it throughout the time. But, I mean, you just got to enjoy your high school experience while it's there.
I'm trying to remember, when did you commit to Michigan State?
April 19th.
So you committed early. Mm-hmm. And I'm a proponent of having an early signing day in August.
Yeah.
To get all this nonsense, and you alluded to it earlier, so you're not taking trips and wasting money on the school's part.
Exactly.
Or wasting time on your part. Would you be in favor of that, of having an early signing period?
I think I would. I would be in favor of having earlier official visits. That's definitely something that's been talked about.
Sure.
And I think that would be better. But I've never really followed recruiting, but this year I noticed how there's been a bunch of decommits since August to right now. So, I mean, I think that would be good. People sometimes commit early and don't really make up their mind very much. But for people that know what place they want to go to, I think it would be good to have a signing day early.
Did you sway at all as the season went along?
Once I committed?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Anybody try to get you back to Sway?
No. I think Tennessee offered me after I committed, and I received a little bit of mail, not a lot, though. But, I mean, I was still 100% Michigan State the entire time.
I appreciate you coming in. Good stuff from you.
Yeah, thank
you. Best
of
luck to you. We'll stay in touch, all right?
Thank you.
It's Brian Lewerke with us for a couple of minutes. Good stuff. Pinnacle High School star quarterback going to Michigan State. A little different spin with him. On the other side, Brock Huard's going to join us from Seattle, ESPN college football analyst. Why is the Today Show showing up today in Seattle to talk about Pete Carroll? It's Thursday. Is the world falling apart in Seattle? And Brock Huard, morning show host there, good friend of the show, he'll weigh in on that and the Seahawks and their future next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Brad Sussmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Off we go in hour number two. We're going to go right up to Seattle. Brock Huard has a few minutes with us, ESPN college football analyst, friend of the show, and he also hosts his morning program, co-hosts it on the ESPN radio affiliate in Seattle as well. I know things have been busy, busy, busy for you. I saw Matt Lauer interviewing Pete Carroll in Seattle. Is the world falling apart up there since Sunday?
It's been a brutal week. I think, honestly, it's turned a little bit. It's finally turned. But that Monday was as low and emotional, people swearing, people crying. You know, our phone lines were jammed at our station from 6 a.m. till midnight. I mean, it was just people having to get it off their chest of something that was oh so very close in every way imaginable. And I think, to be honest with you, Brad, most people have put themselves in that victory circle already. When they got the ball to the one-yard line and Bill didn't call timeouts, and most people went, here we go. Here we go. We're going to win back-to-back championships. Who can say that in sport? Who can say that in the NFL over the last decade? I mean, you're in rarefied air. You did it your way. It's Russell. It's Pete. It's Marshawn. And then all of a sudden, just calamity. I mean, catastrophe to the worst imaginable extent as far as football terms and football plays and the execution of it. So, yeah, it's been a little bit low, been a little emotional, but I think finally starting to feel some of that energy turn.
Okay, lowest point since the Sonics left. Is that fair? Lower than that?
Oh, totally fair. And those are the only two. I mean, those are the only two that that make any they're just in a place all their own. And the NBA was so different because, A, you saw it coming. B, you had a conniving league. C, you had a backstabbing owner. D, you had a totally blind mayor. E, you had just an incompetent city council. So there were so many people, and so much of that was off the court. I mean, this was on the field. This is in the heat of all that emotion and everything that's built up and everything that's pent up. So for me, I would put this number one simply because of just the emotional, you know, in that split second, that balloon just popping before your eyes versus the Sonics that you felt looming, you felt coming. Doesn't make it any less painful, but yeah, for me, this was rock bottom.
Okay, Brock Huard with us live from Seattle for a couple of minutes. Always good to have Brock on the show talking about the follow-up here. Was it a checked play or was it ran as called from your view? What's the view up in Seattle?
Oh, no. It's completely ran as called. Completely in the plan that that they wanted to run it on first down, which they did. They wanted to, and I think this is the right move. You had to utilize clock. You were not going to give the ball back to Tom Brady, who was carving up your totally depleted defense at that point, minus your end, minus the corner, and you did not want to see him on the field. And as Bill was not using his timeout. I mean, this is what is so just fantastic and so destructive at the same moment.
Mm-hmm.
That the line between genius and GOAT is so thin. That Bill Belichick is now a genius, and he had his team prepared for that moment. If that ball is incomplete and they run it in, or if that ball is complete and it's a touchdown, I'm telling you, Belichick is just skewered the same way that Pete has been this week for not calling a timeout and letting 40 seconds burn off the clock and not giving Brady a chance to do what Brady did that entire fourth quarter. But because his guy is executed, Jermaine Kearse gets just walled off. Lockett just gets beat to the spot, throws 12 inches inside instead of maybe down at the belt. Kid makes the play. If you run that 1,000 times, I think they make that outcome one time, but they get it done. And Pete's the GOAT, and Bill Belichick's the genius, and that's the story of the sports world, and that's why football is as beloved as it is, man, because it is that razor thin, the margin of error between failure, success, genius, and GOAT.
What are the fans saying in regards to Bevel versus Carroll? Is there a Bevel versus Carroll? Is there?
Oh, furious at Bevel, and been furious at him for years. Yeah. I mean, he's the absolute. He's taken the absolute brunt of so many of those arrows, even though Pete's doing the best he can to say it exactly as it happened. Throw it. I want to throw it. If you're going to throw it and utilize our timeout after burning a couple, you know that this is a sequence that they wanted. This was a methodology that they wanted. And while people still wanted to see run, at least from a methodology and structure standpoint, they can somewhat grasp that. But the fact you run that play with that much risk, that many moving parts, and 24 is not involved, and 3's really ability outside the pocket is not put into play. No, Bevel is clearly in everyone's crosshairs up here.
Does he lose his job in this offseason?
No, because as I've tried to, as best I can, cut through some of the emotional response.
Sure.
Pete Carroll asks for 3 things. If you were to fire him, Brad, and bring in a new coordinator to interview, a new coordinator would say, okay, prioritize for me what you want, Pete. What do you want out of this position as offensive coordinator? And Pete would say, first and foremost, bar none, you run the ball. You work with the assistant head coach, Tom Cable, and you run the ball. Secondly, you take care of the football. And then third, you make explosive game-changing plays. And in all 3 of those, it's check plus, check plus, check plus. Nobody runs it better, and they set franchise records in that way. Nobody turns it over less in the last 3 years with Bevel and Russell Wilson than the New England Patriots. They were dead tied, I think, a plus 30 ratio ahead of even number 2 over the last 3 years. And then you were talking about the most explosive offense in the NFL. Between their run and their pass game, they were number 1 in explosive plays. So, no, I think when you start to cut through some of just the emotional barrage and look at actually what Pete wants from that offense and from that position, he's gotten it a quarterback and no coordinator, and I don't think there'll be any change coming.
2 other questions we'll let you go. Marshawn Lynch needs Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson needs Marshawn Lynch. How do you work the finances in Seattle?
Yeah, I think you said that just perfectly. They absolutely work best together. It's a 1-2 punch you have to have because there's not a lot of other punches on that offense. And against good opponents, you can very clearly see that. Green Bay, Dallas, New England, we're able to lock up perimeter people, and without number 3 and 24, the thing does not go. 24 wants straight cash, homie. He wants it all guaranteed, and he wants straight cash. Number 3, that deal is going to be very, very different because it's over the long term. Marshawn's a 2-year deal with just loads and loads of cash. Russell Wilson is really a, what do you want? Well, what do you want? Well, what do you want? And how does baseball factor into that possibly? Or how does the length of term factor into that? Or how do we structure this so we can get Marshawn and a Byron Maxwell or a Larry Fitzgerald, whose name's been bounced around a little bit? How can we get some of those guys in a structure standpoint while still getting you paid as one of the highest in the history of this league and the highest in our franchise? So that one a lot more complicated. I hope Marshawn gets done first. And then they get the complicated one done second, and then they move on to an enormous draft for them where they've got right now, I think, 11 picks and are only going to add to that, in my opinion, on draft day and really replenish some of the depth they so desperately need to fill.
One last question. Clear it up, because outside here in Arizona and nationally, this can't sit well in a locker room. There's too much backbiting, frustration, upset. Was this as good as it gets for the Seahawks these last 2 years? Are they on the backside of this run?
Well, I don't think they're on the backside, but it's clearly as good as it gets. And this is one of the trade-offs. I mean, when you have a young, hyper-competitive, emotional team, and then on top of that, you have a Pete Carroll that really cultivates in the building, in the locker room, that allows those guys to be individualistic and allows those personalities to come to the forefront. And he's not your tyrant, and he's not your bunker mentality, and he's not your, hey, we're going to do it this way, and I'm the only voice, or the quarterback's the only voice. No. All you guys have a voice, and you're really young, and you're really hyper-competitive. And one of the trade-offs is, yeah, when there's down times and there's some struggles, and you saw it earlier this year when that team was 3-3, that,
sure,
hey, man, you got to sort through this. So sorting through it, putting the pieces back together, adding the depth, all the transactions that will transpire in the offseason for the Seahawks and 31 other teams around the league, yeah, that's why Pete gets paid more than any other coach in this league. That's why he's built the team the way he has. And that will absolutely be one of the stories we'll follow this offseason.
Talk to you soon. Appreciate your time. Know it's short. Thanks.
You got it, Brad.
It's Brock Huard for a couple of minutes. ESPN college football analyst, ESPN radio morning show host. That's as good as it's going to get. I mean, that's just breaking right through all the crapola that's been out there. And he's right in the middle of it. And there's a lot you could take away from that interview for sure.
Larry Fitzgerald, huh?
That, you know, that's been... But his name has bounced around in a lot of places.
Seattle, though?
Yeah.
I've heard Minnesota. I've heard New England. I haven't heard Seattle.
I've heard Seattle. I've heard San Francisco.
I've heard San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay. That was
news to me. I've heard Denver. It's fine. It's every city's going to try to figure out a way because the blood's in the water down here. You know, Michael can say, yeah, we're going to get this worked out. What's he going to say on Super Bowl week?
Right.
When somebody sticks a microphone in front of him and then everybody's panting mightily in the evening news, Michael Bidwell says Larry Fitzgerald's going to say, stay. What's he going to say? Is he going to look into your microphone and say, no, Larry's not coming back on Super Bowl week? So please breathe when you guys go running with these stories. There was a change of heart. There was a change of this. There was a change of that. He's not going to say, and Larry's, you know, what's Larry going to say? Oh, yeah, I'm definitely coming back. Larry hasn't said I'm definitely coming back. I've never heard that. So, of course, Seattle's going to be brought into the mix, and they should be. As shrewd a business guy as Larry is, and let's not sit here and sugarcoat this, Larry's shrewd. Of course he's going to look around the league. He's going to have to walk away from some money here. And then, well, some things happen, some things change. We wish him well, and, you know, we're going to bring him back, put him in the Ring of Honor. When we went through the whole Anquan thing, when Anquan wasn't here anymore, the town went apoplectic. And what did we hear before that? Well, we hope we can work something out. That's just how this works. Of course he's going to be back. It's the week of Super Bowl. Really not that hard to look through that stuff. All right, a couple other things. This segment brought to you by Gateway Airport. Gateway Airport, where it is just plain easy. Have you flown out of Gateway Airport? Haven't done that? Gateway can get to nearly 40 different locations. I've flown out of Gateway to Rockford to get into Chicago to see my daughter at college. You can get up to Telluride on Gateway Airport through Allegiant Air. Flown up to Vegas before on Allegiant Air. Flown up to Eugene, Oregon. Flown into the Bay Area. So Gateway, it's a very simple airport to get around and travel through. And I think it's one of the best kept secrets here in Arizona in terms of travel. You don't have to go to the big, busy, hustle-bustle airport and spend a lot of jack when you can fly and just plain easy on Allegiant Air out of Gateway Airport. Take Gateway Airport just off the Santan 202 and the 60 in Southeast Mesa. That's Gateway Airport, again, where it's just plain easy. Suns play tonight. Jacque Vaughn got fired today in Orlando. It's not a surprise. Steph Curry had 51 last night. Adam Silver had a chat yesterday. I didn't get into it today. I'm going to save some of it for tomorrow. But he did say that the players are going to join in the All-Star voting someday. I would certainly hope so. Players need to vote. No offense, fans. Most of you can't be objective. So if your guy blows, you're still going to vote for him because he's on your team.
Damian Lillard did not make the All-Star game. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense.
And fans are like, well, we pay hard-earned money. Well, if you can't be trusted to vote, instead you're going to vote for the guy that's in your city and you have his jersey and he stinks and your team stinks. And a guy like Anthony Davis is in a small market down in New Orleans and doesn't get nearly as much attention and run as he should, and he's terrific.
And you don't see that as much in Major League Baseball because the fans follow it. Like most of the diehard baseball fans are such seamheads.
In St. Louis, they have great population, right? Mm-hmm. They have great attendance in St. Louis. And St. Louis are very knowledgeable baseball fans. They're not going to sit there and say, my guy's hitting 220 and he's a first baseman. He should be in the All-Star game. That should not happen in this day and age. But I kind of like that from Adam Silver. I ripped on Adam Silver about a week ago because he's just been non-existent since Donald Sterling. And we have teams tanking games. We have players taking days off. And fans are putting money down to go watch a product where three starters are resting. What are you talking about? Resting. This is their job. It's not that difficult.